Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, November 14th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for the Tuesday edition of our show. No sports cheetah here this week, but we got a couple of different voices for you to hear from. The first, Philip Rosenreich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com. We'll chat with him about the start to the NBA season. Second half of today's show, Lockie Lockerson, a BangTheBook.com contributor who covers a lot of futures stuff for us. Talked with him. We recorded that yesterday afternoon, looking at some college football playoff stuff, tonight's Champions Classic for college basketball, and then also good approaches to betting college basketball futures. So really good segment coming up here at the tail end of today's show. Before we get to that, just want to remind you of all the great content over at BangTheBook.com. Tons of stuff going on over there. Game previews all over the place for NBA, NHL, college basketball, college football. Just so much going on here at this time of the year. You want to try to stay on top of the latest, and we have a lot of that information over at BangTheBook.com. We got Maction tonight. Ohio takes on Akron. Central Michigan takes on Kent State. Wrote up both of the previews for that game, and then also all the previews for the weeknight games. We got some Saturday stuff rolling in now as well. So big week over at BangTheBook.com. Just finished up golf this morning. Got NASCAR coming your way tomorrow. UFC either today or tomorrow. So again, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. We've got our contest page over there, free contests. All you have to do is give us an email address. You'll win cash prizes with those. All we do with that email address is send you a daily newsletter of some of the new content that we have over there at the website. So please feel free to check those out. Also, our sportsbook reviews. If you're out there in the market for a new sports book, you're kind of wondering what's a good fit for you, where you think you want to sign up, check out those reviews. We talk about deposit methods. We talk about some of the other attributes that some of these sports books have: reduced juice, better parlay odds, better teaser odds, whatever the case may be. We've got some of those things listed over there at bangthebook.com, so you can check out those sports book reviews and see what works best for you. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up over at DSI using the promo code BTB and the number 25, you'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. DSI, it's only a game until you bet it. So we'll have Philip Rosenreich joining us here in a few minutes, but I guess we can take a look at the NHL market. We haven't done a whole lot of that here on the show of late. We have Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks over at bangthebook.com, so please feel free to check those out. I know he's got a few plays up for today and a really interesting money line parlay opportunity, so give a look to that piece that he writes up. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter, at Kreature, K-R-E-A-T-T-U-R-E, and chat some of those games with him as well. From my situational betting article, I've got that up over there at bangthebook.com every Sunday. Take a look at the schedule. Look for some good advantageous situational spots for us. I think there are a few out there in the marketplace tonight. One of them being the Vegas Golden Knights out on the road against the Edmonton Oilers. Oilers are minus 190, minus 195 favorite out there in the marketplace. But the reason I think it's worth taking a shot on Las Vegas tonight is that the Golden Knights had a really, really rough road trip. They went out to the East Coast, played, I think, 6 games in 9 days. And that can be really, really challenging for a team, especially when you talk about a Vegas team where, these players didn't play for this team last year. They went through the expansion draft process. So all of them trying to get accustomed, trying to get settled into a new environment with new teammates and all that type of thing. And so just 3-4-1 here on the road to start things off. They are 7-1 at home. And that's something that'll merit watching throughout the season, is how that home ice advantage works at T-Mobile Arena for the Golden Knights. But I feel like when you're a team that goes out and has some of the difficulties that they had with that road trip out on the East Coast, I feel like you try to establish a little bit more of a presence when you get back out on the road. That's the spot here for the Golden Knights. They got to come home, play a game, have a couple of days off. Now they go back on the NHL highway. Excuse me. And I think that this is a good spot to back Vegas catching a really big number, because there are a lot of people that are looking at the start of the year for this team and they're not really believing in it. 10-5-1 here. Not a whole lot was expected of them this season with that expansion roster, but they have played really well despite some goaltender injuries. I think this is a play on spot tonight because you've got a couple of days off. You got time to travel up to Edmonton, get situated there, And like I said, you played so well at home. You want to try to establish and set that same standard on the road. So I think if you take a shot on Vegas here tonight, and also if you take a shot on these spots in general with some of these plus 165, plus 170 types of teams, I think you can find some good opportunities in the NHL to cash those big underdog tickets. So I think Vegas is in a good spot here for tonight's game out on the road in Edmonton. Columbus Blue Jackets. I actually reached out to the Blue Jackets beat writer. They played in Detroit on Saturday night, had 2 days off before playing in Montreal. So I asked him, hey, you know, is Columbus going straight from Detroit to Montreal, or are they coming back home for a couple of days to take some time off? Well, they came back home. So now they go up to Montreal, and this game effectively becomes a standalone road game. And we've talked about these spots a lot in that situational betting article for both the NBA and the NHL. These standalone road games, very, very difficult for teams. You know, you travel, then you come right back home. Sometimes it can kind of feel like it's a waste of time, especially if you're going and playing a non-conference or non-division opponent. Now, in this case, for the Blue Jackets, they are playing a conference opponent in Montreal, but not a divisional game here. Then they come right back home. And, you know, the biggest thing for Columbus in this spot is that they're taking on a Montreal team that has been playing better of late, has won 7 of its last 10, but a very, very flawed Canadiens team. So the line here doesn't really line up for us because Montreal minus 115 favorite in this one. I think that the situational spot priced accurately into the line here. I'd like to see Columbus at plus money. If you can get Columbus to plus money, but right now, no angle on this game. But I think it's a good learning tool for our listeners out there to check out that situational betting article is that, you know, we circle these spots. We look ahead to these spots. We see if these spots do line up for us, but the price still has to be right as well. So with that situational betting article that I do, you know, these aren't automatic plays. They're a guide. Everything is a guide. Power ratings are a guide. These situational plays are a guide. The game previews that we have at BangTheBook.com are a guide. You still want to do your own handicapping. You still want to dig deeper into these situational spots. Still want to dig deeper into the games to find those edges because you may find something that takes you off a game or you may find something that strengthens your position. But you want to make sure that you're looking at the total package, the 360-degree view of a game. These situational articles give you the chance to circle games, give you the chance to look a little bit deeper at them, but sometimes the line just doesn't work out. So Columbus and Montreal, not a play here today for me based on the line that's out there. But situationally, again, you want to look for some of those same spots, the standalone road games and that type of thing. One other game that was in my situational betting article here for this week, Philadelphia taking on Minnesota. Rapid revenge theory in play here. These two teams just played on Saturday in Philadelphia. So, you know, that's always an interesting angle for me. And it's one where, you know, a lot of times you look at playoff revenge. I know that's something that people look at a lot in the NBA specifically. But you get some of these spots here where these teams play some of these home and home sets. Now Philadelphia goes on the road to Minnesota. After losing 1-0 at home, it was a close game, a good game. Shots on goal, very close. No face-off discrepancy in that one. So the two teams played a very equal game. Now Minnesota goes back home. They're a minus 145 favorite. Well, Philadelphia just played this team very close at home. And now, just because the venue is flipped, you've got Minnesota as a big road favorite in this spot. You know, this game here the other day, Philadelphia was a minus 130 favorite. So I think there's a little bit of inflation here based on the fact that Philadelphia lost this most recent game at home. So I think you can come back on the Flyers here tonight, getting a little bit of line value on them. And these home-and-home spots do allow you the chance to do that. So look for those situations as well. And again, I talk about all these things in that Sunday article over at BangTheBook.com. But handicapping the schedule, very, very important to me in these daily winter sports because – I have a hard time keeping up with all these teams, keeping up with what all these teams are doing because I'm so immersed in football until the season ends. You know, we talk about football so much on this show week after week after week. That's what I need to focus the most of my attention on. But when it comes to these daily winter sports, you can use the schedule as a guide. You can use the schedule to your advantage. Maybe you're not an NHL guy. Maybe you don't know these NHL players. Maybe you don't know these NHL teams. You don't know the stats, all that type of stuff. But you can use the schedule to circle games and then dig a little bit deeper. You know, for the NHL here tonight, we've got, what, 9 games on the board, 8 or 9 games on the board here tonight. But I've isolated 3 of them from a situational standpoint. So start with those. Look at those games. See if you find something that you can play. Of course, we've got college football here tonight with Maction. But usually on Tuesdays, you don't have college football. You got early season college basketball. Everyone's still trying to find their sea legs with that, still trying to figure out the right way to approach some of these teams. You've got a few NBA games tonight, only three of them. So you're looking for things to bet. You're looking for things to find value. Maybe the NHL is it. Even if you don't necessarily know a whole lot about these teams, you can use the schedule to your advantage and see what you can come up with. One other note I do want to make here today is that from a Major League Baseball standpoint, regular listeners of the show know that baseball, definitely my primary area of expertise when it comes to this industry, and it's my favorite sport. I follow it very, very closely. But the GM meetings are going on here this week. And it's not the full-fledged winter meetings that we see coming up next month, but the GM meetings are very important. They talk about possible rule changes. Players get a chance to meet with front offices. Agents get a chance to meet with front offices. So this is a really important time for the hot stove season of Major League Baseball. We're going to talk about futures here later on in the show with Lockie Lockerson in terms of college football and college basketball, which are obviously going on. But you don't want to take away any possible investment opportunities because you're not paying attention to the other sports. With Major League Baseball and the GM meetings and the winter meetings, a lot of player movement, trades, a lot of free agent rumors, that type of stuff. Obviously, you have to sort through a lot of the BS that's out there, some of the clickbait and things of that sort. But you know, you do get these opportunities with some of these off-season meeting periods to find some value out there in the futures market. And with the World Series being so far away, a lot of people probably aren't thinking about that yet, but there are some teams, there are some players that are going to be making noise here over the offseason. You've got an interesting free agent group. You've got a very, very good free agent group coming up next year. So teams may be trading, shedding some payroll, trying to find some more cap space to get some of those players for next year. And by cap space, I mean the luxury tax, of course, because Major League Baseball doesn't have a salary cap. But these are all considerations here that Giancarlo Stanton could be on the move. Are the Marlins talking to teams here at the GM meetings? I guarantee you they are. So whoever signs or whoever trades for Giancarlo Stanton, you're going to see a big adjustment in their futures price. You're going to see a spot where value is taken away from you. So you want to try to find value wherever you can. And we talked about that later on in this segment here. And sometimes value can be found by paying attention to what's going on over the offseason and specifically with what's going on with the hot stove. You know, is a team that needs a first baseman going to sign Carlos Santana? Are the Royals able to retain any of their free agents? Well, if the answer is no to the Hosmer and Moustakas thing, do they go to a team that's a good fit for them? Do they go to a place where left-handed power can really flourish? Maybe that's a team that you want to look to buy in the futures market. You know, maybe the Mariners or the Red Sox or somebody pick up Carlos Santana, Gold Glove caliber defense this year, high walk rate, decent power. That's an instant upgrade to that offense. And that's something that's probably not going to be reflected in the futures market because he's not a Giancarlo Stanton. You know, he's not a big name free agent pitcher or something like that. So the Major League Baseball futures market is going to start to shift a little bit now with the GM meetings and then with the winter meetings next month as some of these players start to get signed. So again, if you're not ready to dive in, if you don't have the capability to hold up your bankroll for 10 or 11 months while you wait on these futures to start to be decided, then still it's worth your time. It's worth your interest to look at some of these things and see what the current landscape of that betting market is, and then be able to react accordingly as some more news starts to come out. Not sure what the holdup is with Philip here on today's show. Hopefully we can get him on the program very soon here. But you know, one thing I do want to mention is we look at tonight's Maction card, Ohio and Akron. Ohio a 13-point road favorite in this one. Central Michigan a 17.5-point road favorite against Kent State. You know, sometimes these MAC games, the best thing for you to do is to live bet. And maybe sometimes here in the last 3 weeks of the regular season, the best thing for you to do is live bet. Because we've talked about it throughout the last 2 weeks here. We talked about it on yesterday's show with Kyle Hunter, and I'm sure we'll discuss it as we go throughout the week here on Bang the Book Radio. But you have a different set of handicapping considerations when it comes to this time of year. Power ratings are still relevant, but they're not the be-all, end-all. They never have been the be-all, end-all. But you know, for a lot of guys, they bet based solely on the numbers. They bet based on what their power ratings are telling them. Well, here at this stage of the game, you have different considerations, specifically when it comes to bowl eligibility. You know, we talked about it on yesterday's show with Kyle Hunter that you can kind of see in the betting market already here, you're starting to pay that inflation. You're paying a point and a half, maybe even 2 points in these spots where teams are looking to secure that sixth win. Or if they have four wins and need to win out in order to get to a bowl game. You don't see that early on in the college football regular season. That's not incorporated into your raw power rating number. So that's why you have to take some different angles, different approaches to college football here at this time of the year. That's why I think live betting may not be a bad idea, because you've got a lot of teams that aren't going to bowl games. And if you're looking at it on the surface ahead of time, you're going to say, okay, you know, this team that's 2-8, they're probably not going to show up for this game. They're probably not going to be invested. I'm going to bet the other side. Okay, not a bad thought process, not a bad way to go about it. But wouldn't it be nicer if you could see the first couple series of the game and see, okay, this 2-8 team, they have quit. They're just not going to play. Because live betting is based on the mathematics. It's not really based on what you see. It's not based on any of the narratives. Maybe there are adjustments to the injuries, but it's based on the math. It's based on what the opening line was, what the exposure's like on both sides of the game. They're not going to look at intangible things like whether or not a team has quit. Before the game, yeah, maybe that's built into the line a little bit. During the game, it's not really going to be that big of a factor. So if you start watching some of these college football games, like this Central Michigan-Kent State game tonight, for example, you know, you look at this one on the surface and you say, okay, Kent State's terrible. You know, they have no quarterback play. Their best offensive player was hurt. They use their one running back a ton. Justin Rankin gets a lot of touches in the passing game and, of course, a lot of touches in the running game. Well, what if you start watching this thing? And maybe Central Michigan's up 7-0 or 10-0, but they're moving the football with ease and Kent State's doing nothing. Maybe you can live bet. Maybe you're taking a worse number than the pregame, but if you watch Kent State and you see a couple of series and you can see that they're just not invested, that they just don't have a whole lot of interest in playing this game, then a live betting opportunity opens up to where you just go ahead and say, okay, Central Michigan can name the score here. As long as they want to keep going, they can name the score. I'm comfortable with playing this. But before the game, you're asking a Central Michigan team that is pretty mediocre. I mean, they've got a good defense, but offensively they've got some problems. You're asking them to cover 17 and a half points. There's more risk involved in questioning Kent State's effort level before the game than there is during the game, to where maybe you can get Central Michigan minus 17, minus 21, something like that live. So that's something I want our listeners to focus on here over the last few weeks of the college football season, is that live betting is your friend. Live betting is your friend all the time, but especially now, because you can take some of these situations and say to yourself, okay, you know, is this 1-10 team, 1-9 team going to come out and play? Is North Carolina going to give an effort again this week after they gave a really good effort last week? You know, what kind of effort does Kansas show up with? What about Baylor? You know, you've got a first-year head coach in Matt Rhule. Jobs are on the line for next year. Playing time on the line for next year. Does Baylor show up? Do the Baylor Bears come to play here this week against Iowa State? Or does Iowa State get the chance to get back on track with an easy victory after a tough loss last week? Those are the considerations that you have to make here at this time of the year. And once you see the game start to play out, that's maybe when you want to attack. A situation like Baylor, I look at it and say, okay, look, it's been a rough year for the Baylor program. They've lost some guys from, you know, that have transferred. They've lost some scholarships. They've lost the entire coaching staff. Matt Rhule is a high intensity, high energy type of guy, wants to bring a lot of positive energy to this program. That's great. So in terms of my pregame handicap, I think to myself, okay, this Baylor team's going to show up. This Baylor team's going to want to play for Matt Rhule. They're going to want to play for their jobs. And I think when you look at the line that's out there in the marketplace right now with Baylor as a 9-point underdog against a much, much better Iowa State team, I think that's evident. I think the idea that Baylor wants to play, the idea that Baylor wants to give an effort, is built into the line. Now, let's say we see a series or two in this game. Iowa State's up a quick 14-0. Baylor just looks defeated. They look demoralized. You know, take the number out of the equation at that point, because at that point, you're betting a different game. You're betting live. Pre-game, it's nothing. You're doing all your work. You're doing all your stats research and all that type of thing. The one thing that you have to guess on when it comes to these games is the effort level of both teams. Does Iowa State come in with a hangover off of some bigger games. You know, can they go to Waco, win by double digits and cover the number? I don't know. But if I see them start fast, then it changes my opinion. Then I get a different mindset for this game. Also, you know, is Baylor playing hard? I can adjust accordingly at that point. So I think live betting at this time of the year, and really at all times of the year, is just such a great asset for handicappers. I think it's such a great asset for gamblers because you don't have to gamble as much. You can see things. You can see how the game is going to play out. You can see how the game is taking shape and then react accordingly. So that's one of those spots where, like I said, you would think Baylor, from a pregame standpoint, is going to show up here because they have that first-year coach, because he's going to talk these kids up. They're winless at home. Maybe that's a factor for them as well. They're 0-5 in Waco this year. But again, this is all – you're speculating. You're trying to guess. You're trying to put yourself in the minds of 18- to 24-year-old college football players and try to figure out if they want to be there when they're going to win two, maybe three games at most this season. That's something that maybe you need to see with your eyes. So then at that point, you can make that play at Iowa State. And again, there are a lot of situations like this out there. Illinois is another one here this week. Ohio State's supposed to beat Illinois by 40 to cover the number here. Now, now it's in Ohio State's best interest to blow out everybody they can the rest of the way to try and improve their college football playoff standing. Illinois is a 2-8 team. They're 0-7 in conference play. They don't even have 100 points in conference play yet. They've given up 209. Do they show up, or do they know going into this game that, you know, you're going to walk into a situation where you're going to get blown out and there's really nothing you can do about it? Ohio State's just a better team. Can Lovie Smith talk this team up? You know, Lovie Smith, a guy that's used to dealing with professional football players, second year here in the college ranks, is he able to get this team invested? Is he able to get this team to show up and give a big effort? I don't know. But you can find that out from a live betting standpoint. Does Ohio State meet any resistance on its first drive? Does Illinois try to do some creative things offensively to keep this game close? You know, there are just a lot of factors here at this time of the year, and live betting takes away some of that risk, some of that exposure that you may have with a pregame position. So I got something that I want our listeners to focus on, not just at this time of the year, but as we go into future seasons, because honestly, live betting, in-game wagering, is the future of this industry. Hopefully we do get legalization. Hopefully it is something that happens soon enough. But, you know, when you look at how tight the markets have gotten from a pregame standpoint, it's hard. You know, a lot of professional guys and several of them that we have on the show here have struggled this season. They have struggled with the full game handicap. But live betting is something that, you know, can still work out for them. And then it helps their bottom line. It doesn't help what's happening for their clients. It doesn't help with what's tracked out there. And certainly in this industry, that's something that's really hard for them. But from a live betting standpoint, they can do some things that they weren't able to do previously. And that's the direction that this industry is going, because you have the ability to pick on variants more so when it comes to live betting. Yeah, you can get some bad beats, and yeah, you can misread a game or something like that. But think about it. You know, if you're betting a college basketball game pregame and the star player for a team gets two fouls, let's say Marvin Bagley gets a couple fouls early on tonight, has to sit on the bench for 13 or 14 minutes in the first half, isn't that something you would have liked to know before the game? Maybe you're holding a Duke ticket. That's frustrating for you. But then from a live standpoint, that's something you can look to take advantage of in the betting market, is at a TV timeout after that second foul, go ahead and hit Michigan State, or go ahead and hit the under, or something like that. That's the direction that this industry is going, is to take advantage of live betting and use that to its full capacity to build up your bankroll. All right, we got Philip Rossman-Reich on the line here from Orlando Magic Daily. Going to chat some NBA with him. Philip, how's it going today, man?
It's going good. Still getting on West Coast time, so trying to get myself going here in the morning.
Yeah, you mentioned West Coast time with the Orlando Magic losing to Golden State last night by 10, 110 to 100. But I think it's a good starting point here is to go ahead and talk about your Magic, a team that you know inside and out, a team that you know very well. 8-6 to start the year. I'm not sure that you expected that type of start from a team that won just 29 games last season.
No, and especially with the schedule they had early on, and a lot of really good teams that they played at the beginning of the season, it was just very unexpected to see this team get out to such a hot start. And really, what was more surprising is that their offense has just looked so incredible. They've really taken some huge leaps offensively. A lot of players just look completely different than they did last year. And obviously, internal improvement's the best way to get better. And so the Magic really just kind of got better by themselves. And now, you know, you didn't expect it to happen this suddenly, especially with the way last year went.
Well, one of the themes that we're going to talk about here on today's show is we're going to talk about sustainability with some of these surprise teams. And with Orlando being one of them, let's touch on that a little bit. They got off to a very hot start because they were shooting extremely well from beyond the arc. Is this a team that now kind of tumbles, or is there some level of sustainability to the level of play that they've had?
You know, I do think the Magic are going to you know, the way I've been phrasing it is regress to the mean. I mean, this team has been shooting so incredibly. I mean, I think they were shooting at one point, you know, fairly recently, 40% from beyond the arc. They were just destroying everybody offensively. And so it definitely felt like this team was going to kind of fall back a little bit. It's just completely unavoidable that they were going to do that. So I think we're seeing that happen right now, actually. The Magic are in the midst of a stretch where they're playing eight of 10 games on the road. They're 3 games into that stretch, and they're 1-2, and we're starting to see the team struggle to shoot a little bit more. Some of their flaws are kind of getting exposed a little bit. But I think overall, though, this is still a much better team. I don't think that going back to the mean means they're going to go back to a 29-win team that gets blown out by 30 every night. This team does feel a little bit different. And so, you know, they may not be a team that can maintain an 8-3 pace like they were a few weeks, or a 7-3 pace like they were a few weeks ago. But this is probably a team that's going to hover around 500, and that'll put them squarely in the playoff race, which I think is exactly where they want to be.
Now, one of the things I want to ask you about, you mentioned them playing so many road games, and now they're down to 4-4 on the road. They are 4-2 at home. Is this a variance thing in terms of their three-point shooting, or does it have something to do with better shot selection, which could continue to be a positive factor at home with a familiar shooting backdrop?
You know, what's really interesting is the Magic actually shoot more threes and shoot better from three on the road statistically. Whether that lasts or not, I don't know. But I actually think at home you see less of the three-point shooting, and the Magic are a lot more comfortable attacking the basket there. It's still early to say that there is some variance, but of course young teams tend to play better, more aggressive at home than they do on the road. So it does make a little bit of sense that is happening, that there is a perception that that's happening, but probably a little too early in the season to make conclusions. I mean, it's, you know, we're 14, 15 games into the year. So a long, long way to go still.
All right, let's talk about one of the biggest surprises here, and maybe we can call this an overachiever. I don't know. We'll sort of talk our way through that. The Detroit Pistons, they are 10-3 on the year so far, 7-1 in their new digs at Little Caesars Arena. So clearly they like the home cooking there, although I'm not a huge fan of the Little Caesars pizza. But you know, this is a team that's gotten off to a phenomenal start at home. Is this a thing? I mean, is this a team that could very well make the playoffs, or are they going to see the balloon burst very soon?
Well, you know, I think Detroit is making the leap that we all thought they were going to make last year. I mean, remember 2 years ago they were in the playoffs. They gave Cleveland all they could handle in a 4-game series before they were swept. But each of those games is very, very close. And everyone kind of pegged Detroit last year as a team that was going to be on the rise. They suffered a lot of injuries last year. They never really got themselves going, and there was reportedly some infighting going on with that team, and they just fell flat. They just couldn't get themselves back into the playoffs. You know, they added some good pieces this year. Avery Bradley, I think, has been a really, really big help for them defensively. Andre Drummond has come back refocused. Reggie Jackson looks a little bit healthier, and so now we're seeing their talent come through again. We're seeing that team that we thought was going to be a player in the Eastern Conference last year, or grow into a player in the Eastern Conference last year. And so we're finally seeing them realize that potential. And so it's surprising how quickly it's come for Detroit and how they've been able to maintain their spot atop the Eastern Conference, or near the top of the Eastern Conference. But it's not so surprising to see Detroit back in the playoff mix. They just needed to get their chemistry right, and right now they have it.
So I think the question then at this point becomes, you know, how far does this drop go? I mean, this is not a team that's going to win 77% of its games the rest of the way. There's no doubt about that. But perception means everything here in the NBA betting market. And that is something that's very important and a point I want to drive home to our listeners here, is that you run into a lot of recency bias when it comes to the NBA. If it is a game, it is a league of streaks too. I mean, you have teams that'll lose four straight, win four straight, that type of thing. Just the nature of the beast for whatever reason. So for Detroit, you know, they're going to fall off, but the question is how far will they do it? I mean, is this a team that winds up in the 45 win range? Is it a team that regresses all the way back to 500 like the Magic? What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure where they end up, because you know they had so many problems last year. If they hit that losing streak rut, do they revert back to that? Do they fall back into those habits? I mean, I'm looking at their stats right now. They've played 8 of their 13 games at home, so they've gone out west and they played very, very well out west, but they played a lot of home games so far, and that's an easy way to establish your base and establish some confidence. We'll see how much that lasts. I mean, I agree. I don't think they'll stay at a 769 win percentage. I don't think they'll be, you know, a team that's winning, you know, 60 games or something. But they could certainly flirt, you know, they could, you know, I would say their ceiling's probably around 50 wins. And, you know, they could, you know, I don't see them being much worse than a 500 team. So they're gonna regress to their mean. But again, with how tight the Eastern Conference is looking and how tight it's probably going to be, they'll be in that playoff race around the 40, you know, 41, 40. They should be comfortably in if they're around 42, 43 wins making the playoffs. But they'll be involved in that and probably win mid-40s, I would think.
All right, let's talk about some really bad teams here, because a lot of times in the NBA, you can find some value on some bad teams from an against the spread standpoint just because they are so bad. And we've got several of them here this year, and they are very clear who they are. But we'll start with the worst team in the NBA right now, tied for the worst team in the NBA. That's the Atlanta Hawks, a team that you know very well, being in the Southeast Division there. 2-12 start to the year for the Hawks. They haven't won a game at home. They're 0-4 at home, 2-8 on the road. So to be fair to them, they haven't played a whole lot of home games here, but this is a very, very bad basketball team. How bad are they?
They're going to struggle. There's no doubt about it. You know, you lose so much that they did this summer. I think Dennis Schroeder is still getting used to his role as the main guy. I got a role that he really wanted, but you know, this Hawks team just doesn't have the overall talent. They just lost so much this summer, and they don't really have they're not going to have the ability to win night in, night out. Now, having said that, you know, watching them just a little bit, you know, Mike Budenholzer is a fantastic coach. He runs a great system, and the Hawks are still going to challenge teams. So, I mean, I don't know what their average margin of defeat is. They're going to get beat plenty of times, but it's always going to be that one game where their system just bugs another team. I mean, that's what you kind of see with some of these bad teams. Chicago is another team like that where, you know, they don't have a lot of talent, but they're scrappy. They play really, really hard and they come at you. And if you take them too lightly, they'll nip you in the butt. Because that's kind of what these bad teams have to do. You just with a team like Atlanta and a team like Chicago, they just got to hope that they can stay in the game long enough to make it interesting at the end. And most nights they're probably not going to do that, but they both have, you know, at least with Budenholzer, the Hawks have a really good coach who's going to keep his game, you know, he's going to keep his game plan strong. And if they execute it, they can still be a little dangerous. It's just not going to happen every night.
Yeah, the Hawks with a nice cover last night. They're actually 6-7-1 now against the spread, depending on the closing number you've got. In last night's game against New Orleans, they lost by a point. New Orleans came into that game at 9-4 against the spread, so they had been one of the better bets in the NBA. And I think that's something that kind of merits a little bit of consideration here, Philip, is that, you know, in the NBA, we talk about the schedule. I know there have been some more off days incorporated into the schedule to help these teams out. I still think we're seeing the same number of 3-4s and 4-6s. We're just seeing more off days when teams get back home or right before they take on a big road trip. So the situational elements are still out there. And that's the thing is with the bottom tier so clearly defined early on, with the Hawks, with the Bulls and the Mavericks, who we'll talk about here in a couple of minutes, and also the Sacramento Kings. You know, these are teams that can cover spreads and can be competitive, just because they get overlooked based on, you know, the daily nature of the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's easy to kind of look at a team's record and say, oh, this is not how it's gonna. This is, you know, this game's gonna end up this way. And while the league has done a really good job to decrease back to backs and get rid of 4-6s, I mean, you can see in plenty of instances where the schedule just gets you. I mean, every year, teams have two or three what I call schedule losses, and then what a lot of people call schedule losses, where you just look at the schedule and you're like, there's no way this team's gonna be up for that game. I mean, I know. You know, I'll just use one example. In March, the Magic go on like a 5-game road trip. They play at San Antonio on the last day of that road trip and then play back-to-back at home against Milwaukee. If you find that game in March, it's going to be really tough for the Magic to win that home game against Milwaukee coming off a back-to-back, off of a road trip. I don't think – I mean, there's a little bit of time between the last game of the West Coast trip and the game in San Antonio. I doubt the Magic are going to be able to get home to get some rest before then, and even then you're flying back out to San Antonio. So the schedule still has its quirks, and if you're betting and if you're looking at it, you definitely want to consider whether a team is coming off a day of rest, whether a team is playing on a back to back, because those are fewer now, and so the teams that do get rest, I think, do have a little bit more of an advantage when they do play a team that's a little more tired.
All right, so the Dallas Mavericks, they're 2-12 as well, tied for the worst record in the league with the Atlanta Hawks. They take on the San Antonio Spurs tonight, Dallas catching 6 or 6.5 at home, depending on where you look. This has to be hell for Rick Carlisle and also Mark Cuban, obviously, but especially Carlisle. And the situation here in Dallas where, you know, this is a team that has had so much success over the last several years. And then now it's just been a long, sustained down period. Does this get worse before it gets better for this team?
You know, I think this year they recognized it would probably be very bad. I don't think they probably didn't think it would be this bad because they have veteran guys like Wes Matthews and Harrison Barnes and, of course, Dirk Nowitzki. But that team, they just don't have a lot of depth, and they're relying very heavily on their rookie, Dennis Schröder, who's been very, very good. But that is a team that they just don't have the chemistry and the pieces together to really make a push. I mean, Rick Carlisle is a fantastic coach. If anyone can figure out how to get things to work, it's him. But you got a Nerlens Noel situation, which isn't sustainable for either player or team. And you got a lot of young guys coming off the bench, playing with some veterans who, you know, just don't mesh well together for whatever reason. Dallas is still a dangerous team. I mean, you got to watch out for some of their guys, but they're eminently beatable because of their lack of depth, because they just don't have a lot of players outside of their, you know, kind of their big four with Barnes and Smith and Matthews. And then Dirk Nowitzki, who's you know, kind of going through a retirement tour right now, if you want to call it that. And so Dallas just hasn't been able to get itself going. And I don't think that's going to, you know, they'll probably go through a winning streak and kind of climb their way out of the cellar with, you know, Sacramento and Phoenix there. But, you know, I don't know if it's going to get much better.
All right, so let me ask you about this, Philip. We got a lot of teams out there that are hovering within a game or two of 500, and that's not really a big surprise. Everybody trying to get back into the rhythm of the season. Are there any 500 teams out there that you think are going to really start to separate themselves from the pack and maybe start to move up the standings a little bit?
Well, there are two that I think that we should always keep an eye on, and that's Oklahoma City at 6-7. And Cleveland at 7-7. I think those two teams are going to figure things out, and they're going to win games. There's just too much talent on those teams, and you trust that they know how to manage a regular season, know how to kind of push themselves through some of these struggles. So I do suspect that both of those will take their next step, or will take a step forward, at some point this season. I just don't think that's avoidable. I mean, they're both very, very, very good. Another team that's at 500 that I think we're going to see figure things out, Milwaukee at 7-6, I think is going to probably figure things out and start winning some games. And then in the Western Conference, Denver starting to figure things out at 8-6, and they're starting to push themselves forward. So, it seems like a lot of the teams that are at 500 that you wouldn't expect to be at 500 are those veteran teams that you know will figure it out. I mean, teams like Orlando, teams like New York, teams like New Orleans. You don't trust those teams to kind of maintain that pace. And so those are the teams that I would expect to fall back a little bit as the better teams begin to assert themselves. I mean, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And so the guys that got out to a fast start, some of them can't maintain that pace. Others stay back in the pack. they'll make their move at the 10-mile mark or the 15-mile mark or whatever it is. And so the standings, you know, don't look so normal quite yet. It's still early in the season, but within the next month and a half, I'm sure we'll get a better sense of which teams are actually for real.
Well, of course, the challenging thing for bettors out there is that the Cavs and the Thunder are both priced like the high upside, high ceiling teams that they are, and they just haven't gone out there and covered a whole lot of numbers because they just haven't gotten things squared away yet. And of course, for the Cavaliers, I mean, it's been very clear in their 14 games when they've wanted to play, when they've played teams that they've wanted to go up against, the Bucks, the Celtics, the Bulls, that they just have that rivalry with the Bulls, beat the Knicks last night. When they've played teams they've wanted to play, they've mostly shown up. When they've played games that they don't care too much about, that's when they've lost and looked bad in the process. So I certainly wouldn't worry about the Cavs at all. Last thing I'll ask about here, Philip, in terms of those teams that are kind of in the middle of the pack right now, any that you feel like are overachieving a little bit here that maybe aren't as good as 500 teams?
Well, I think Orlando and New York are really good examples of teams that are probably overachieving a little bit. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis has played absolutely insane. I mean, even last night in the Cavs comeback against the Knicks, Cleveland had to put LeBron James on Porzingis to get him out of rhythm and kind of keep him from helping the Knicks maintain that lead, which is a rare move that you see in November at least. So the Knicks, I think, are playing a lot better than everyone expected, and Porzingis is a big reason for that. They're scrappier and they're better. Don't get me wrong; they're definitely a better team. But they're a team that I expect to fall off. Orlando is definitely a team I expect to fall off. Their hot shooting is starting to run out, and you're beginning to see some of their flaws. They're not a great rebounding team. They really rely on pushing the tempo, and so when they don't score, they struggle to get stops, and when they struggle to get stops, they struggle to get out in transition and score. So they're a team that I think is definitely due to fall a little bit in the Eastern Conference. And I think there are a few teams out West that might be due for a fall. But I think the West, the nine teams that are going to be competing for the playoffs, if they've really established themselves, maybe the Clippers will climb back into that race at 5-8. So, there's definitely going to be a lot of changes to the standings at this early stage. We're far from done, and it's far from time to really look at the standings closely.
Philip Rosenreich from OrlandoMagicDaily.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, right now we're dealing with the West Coast trip, so we're talking a lot about the Magic Top Star, trying to figure out whether this team is for real or not. Looking at early season trends and trying to figure out whether they can last, whether they'll stick to it for the rest of the season. Like I said, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and the Magic got out to a fast start, and we're trying to see if they can keep up that pace.
Well, you can find Philip on Twitter with one of my favorite Twitter handles, at PhilRSquared. Philip Rosenreich, OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Thank you so much for joining us, man, and we'll talk to you again soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Some solid NBA analysis there from Philip Rosenreich of OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Good to get him back on the program here for today's show. And what I really wanted to accomplish there in that segment is to look at some of those teams that have overachieved, some of those teams that have underachieved, because those are going to be the teams out there in the ATS market with some buy signs and some sell signs out there. So hopefully our listeners can take advantage of some of those things. All right, we got one more segment left here to go on today's show. Recorded this yesterday afternoon with Lockie Lockerson, bangthebook.com writer. Also has his own site, LockieLockerson.com. Good stuff here. Good to get him on the program. Talk some college football futures, college football playoff, college basketball futures, and some other things as well, including tonight's Champions Classic. So without further ado, here is that maiden segment with Lockie Lockerson. All right, I'm joined now by Lockie Lockerson, who's a new Bang the Book writer, joined us a few weeks ago, also has his own site, LockieLockerson.com. And like I said on yesterday's show, it's up to you to decide whether that's his real name or not. But Lockie, how's it going today, man?
Pretty good, Adam. I think I can, spoiler alert, that Lockie is not my real name, but doing pretty well. I know a bunch of your guests like to tell you how warm it is in Las Vegas, and it's a sunny afternoon, whatever. It's like 30 degrees in Connecticut right now, but I'm wearing pajamas inside on a Monday afternoon talking about gambling, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, you can't beat it. I mean, I get to wear pajamas or sweatpants to work every day, so I'm totally cool with it, and I know exactly where you're coming from. And we're going to talk some futures stuff here on today's segment. That's what Lockie covers for us over at bangthebook.com. He had his first college basketball piece out early last week, college football and NFL pieces on the regular here. And I guess let's start with the college football playoff. And a lot of people are rooting for chaos. You and I were talking before we started recording here. The people may not get what they want.
Yeah, I mean, I think people in general like to see chaotic sports situations play out. I think that's more fun. I think the TV viewership gets better. I think it creates really good water cooler discussion. But especially this past week, I think you got clarity in terms of big game matchups. But the 2 weeks before that, when sort of random teams were losing and things got, quote, unpredictable, I think really what you saw that happening with was teams in the middle tier, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, actually became less valuable to bet on. With the exception of Auburn, and then your top four teams, I think actually just kind of even more solidified claims to playoff spots. So for example, you know, can Alabama lose and totally be fine? That's a question that a lot of people are asking. I think the answer is yes. I'm not sure it matters who they lose to unless it's Mercer. But I think, you know, what you're sort of seeing is like fake chaos. So the way that manifests itself is, if you like a team, so we're recording this on a Monday, Tuesday night, the playoff is going to come out. It's going to be in some order, Alabama, Clemson, Miami, Oklahoma. Where they put Miami is pretty irrelevant because Clemson and Miami are going to play anyway. I think the distance between those teams and other teams is much larger. Auburn is the only chaotic team that even has a chance. And we were talking off air about Five Dimes has a prop up, which has actually apparently been taking a lot of money. Will a two-loss team end up making the playoff? And then I think you were saying that the no for that has actually been set down from high twos to something like minus 210, 215. To me, that's a little crazy. I think the only realistic two-loss team with a chance to make the playoff is Auburn. Their path is still pretty difficult. It still involves winning at Alabama. It still involves winning the SEC championship against Georgia at that point. I think the likelihood that that happens, or the likelihood like of less than 1% that something like Ohio State making it happens, I think the no on that is actually a pretty strong bet, because there are still, honestly, there are still undefeated teams that would have a much more rightful claim even with one loss.
Well, here's the thing about the two-loss team. And look, if Auburn beats Alabama and Georgia, I mean, it's going to be them. So that certainly is a possibility. And beating Alabama and Georgia is much easier said than done. But the Ohio State thing is very interesting to me. And I talked about this last year on the shows, and I beat this point to death, but I can do it again here this year. If the committee can find a way to put Ohio State in the college football playoff, they're going to do it because Ohio State is a massive draw. From a money standpoint, not having Ohio State in the college football playoff hurts them. Having Ohio State in the college football playoff is a big deal. They travel very, very well. People love Ohio State or they hate Ohio State. There's not much middle ground with that team. So there's a lot of intrigue to put the Buckeyes into the playoff. If they can do it, if Ohio State beats that team up north by 40 and Wisconsin by 40 in the Big Ten championship game, and they get a little bit of help along the way, something like Oklahoma loses, you know, maybe Alabama runs into some kind of problem, I don't know. But if they can find a way to put Ohio State in it, they're going to do everything in their power that they can, because financially it makes sense. And whether people want to believe this or not, the college football playoff is about money, just like everything else in college athletics.
So it's funny because I agree with everything you said, except that that leads me to make a bet on the yes in this case. So the funny thing is I totally agree with you. I was actually I'm still a little naive. I thought it was a little surprising that Ohio State, just based off the Oklahoma win, got the spot last year. I was holding like a little bit of Penn State futures, which was kind of unfortunate in that situation. I think I agree with everything you're saying. Ohio State's a huge brand. They're going to draw really well. College football is on some level rigged, for lack of a better term, so that certain outcomes happen more often. When we talk about college basketball, it's actually no different whatsoever. I think the thing is, if you're talking about a line of 215, 220, 230, for that to happen, like there's basically an implied percent. You're saying that, you know, basically I'm betting minus 215. I'm saying I think there's more than a 68% chance that that's going to happen. And I think I'm not sure that that's debatable right now with the way the climate is. Like, I think the likelihood that Auburn gets in and the permutations in which Ohio State gets in, if you add all of those up, I think you still end up with a number that's much less than what the market is saying.
No, I completely agree. And if you think that Auburn is the only two-loss team that can make it into the playoff, Well, just go ahead and play a money line rollover in their game against Alabama in the Iron Bowl and in the SEC championship game, and you're going to get paid much, much healthier than you would the plus 165. So that would be the way that I would play it if you truly believe that Auburn is the only two-loss team that can get there. And I think a case can be made for that. I mean, Ohio State getting blown out by Oklahoma and Iowa doesn't really look good on their resume. So that'd be the way that I would play it, is just roll over the money line on Auburn, and that's the way that you'd get a two-loss team into the playoff, and you do a lot better than plus 165.
Right. I totally understand. One thing, I was actually talking to somebody today, and I referred to this time of year as open parlay season, and I guess this is a perfect segue for me to explain what I mean by that. So basically, the futures market, for lack of a better term, can be pretty dead this time of year. The numbers are like pretty low on most of the teams. There isn't a lot of value with so few games left. A team isn't going to sneak up and all of a sudden in week 10, we're going to say, oh, that team's really good, they should be in the playoff. It just, obviously that doesn't happen. So, you know, what you end up with is, especially in a lot of the shops that have less profitable futures, where the numbers are maybe like shrunk a little bit intentionally, what you get are prices like, I think I saw one place, which I won't name, had Auburn 10-1 to win the title, Wisconsin 15-1 to win the title, even Miami, Clemson, Oklahoma, which you would assume are pretty flat at this point, plus 450, something like that. And what you have to play that against is, as a gambler, all the tools in your arsenal, okay, you have the ability to make that futures bet, but you also have the ability in a lot of places to create an open parlay. And I mean, especially there are a bunch of teams this applies to, but if you would like to bet on a team to win the title, and they have to win every game from this point forward in order to do so. Obviously, they'll have to win the semifinal and the final in the playoff. But if they have to win every single one of their games to get there, and they win the games to win the title, an open parlay is almost 100% going to be more profitable in those situations. So the teams that applies to would be Clemson, Auburn, Ohio State, Wisconsin, teams like that where – if they lose, it's done. Oklahoma, same thing. So basically, if you like one of those teams, you know, like let's take Clemson. You know, they're going to be huge favorite at South Carolina. They're going to be small favorite in the ACC championship against Miami. Then you have the two semifinals. Like, you're putting those together, you're going to get better than plus 450. You just are, because the semifinal odds this year are probably going to be pretty short unless a team like Wisconsin makes it. So, I mean, really got to ask yourself, when you bet a future, one of my big things to people is, why are you betting this? Is it, you know, you're betting it because you think the team will actually win and you just want to hold on to it, in which case an open parlay is 1,000,000% a better option. Are you holding on to it because you think the price is likely to drop really soon and you're going to play the opposite way for arbitrage? Then that's a totally different market. That's a totally different set of criteria. You're basically just price grabbing at that point. But, you know, for a lot of people out there, they're looking at a sheet, they're figuring out who they like. I think knowing about open parlays is a really good weapon for them to have in their arsenal.
No, I completely agree. And it's sort of a little bit like the money line rollover concept that we talk about in conference tournaments for college basketball and also the national championship, because that's generally a better way for you to go than looking at some sort of futures price. Because like you said, you know, you have this opportunity to just get a bigger profit margin on the initial investment that you've made. One of the nice things about the money line rollover when it comes to something like this or something like the NCAA tournament is that to hedge, you just stop betting it, as opposed to having to play the other side, figure out the math with that. You know, you can just stop betting it. So there are a few different ways to attack this college football playoff thing. And what's nice is that, you know, you do have a situation where a lot of these teams look like they're going to be locked into their playoff spots unless something really crazy or really fluky happens. So it gives you a little bit more of an opportunity to, you know, find alternative betting options out there over the last couple of weeks here in the regular season. And then of course on into the conference championship games. So let's look at the four teams that are probably in right now. You've got Alabama, Miami, Oklahoma, Clemson should be the top four here in some way, shape, or form. Wisconsin's probably five to me, even though they're undefeated, just because they don't have the body of work, and their big test will come against Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, assuming the Buckeyes do get there. So do you feel like any of these top four teams do have value right now?
So it's interesting. I do think, In an odd way, I do. So the 2, 3, 4 teams you mentioned, I think, you know, obviously when you're betting futures, you want to try to identify teams headed into significant matchups, grab them before that with the likelihood that you think they're going to win. And then on the back end, the price goes down a lot, right? So that's pretty obvious. I think a lot of people know that. So with that in mind, obviously, it's safe to say the value has pretty much been sucked out of Miami and sucked out of Oklahoma at this point. They just played their biggest games of the year. They just looked as awesome as they can look. Oklahoma goes from 15 down to now I'm seeing like that they're the second choice, basically, something in like 4, 5, 6 range. You're talking about Miami now, like hashtag turnover chain is basically streaming a call across America. Like you're just – there's going to be no value there. The funny thing is, I kind of think there might be value on Alabama right now. I think you can find Alabama at plus ones, mid plus ones in a couple spots. You can find them in the form of props, them versus the field, other kind of things. I think Alabama at plus money might actually be pretty good here. And the reason for that is just sort of the narrative of the Alabama linebacker injuries, the Mississippi State game in which maybe they looked a little – I don't know, even with Mississippi State for a lot of that game, which I guess would surprise a lot of people. I think there's sort of been a narrative crafted that they're vulnerable. And right now, I don't know if I see a team that can really go toe-to-toe with them, even with the injuries of some of the defensive positions. And the other thing with Alabama is they're not eligible for this open parlay, right? So you're trying to match odds, you're trying to kind of do the math. Alabama can lose a game, which, by the way, would lose your open parlay. They can lose a game and be fine in a lot of situations. They get to the SEC championship game undefeated and they lose to Georgia. I think they're still good. I think it creates an interesting conversation about Georgia, but you know, I still think they're fine. So in a weird way, Alabama at plus money right now with the idea that if they were to again, look dominant going forward, Saban with more time off going into the playoff, I think you could still see some pretty big Alabama numbers. If you get Alabama, Wisconsin as a 1-4, I mean, all those kind of things. I think it sets up hedge value. I think Alabama at plus money might be a good idea right now.
Yeah, Alabama right now, plus 135 at Five Dimes, plus 120 at Bet Online. So again, like anything else with futures, listeners out there, you want to make sure that you're shopping around for the best price. That's a good reason to have multiple sports books at your disposal. And Lockie, let me ask you this then. The Iron Bowl, the look-ahead line right now, Alabama minus 3.5 against Auburn. I'm very interested to see what happens with that game, because if Auburn does beat Alabama, winds up going to the SEC championship game, can you really make a case to keep an 11-1 Alabama team out of the playoff? I mean, when you look at their body of work, that win over Florida State really doesn't look like much of anything now, and that's not their fault. It's just that Florida State had some injuries, ran into a pretty rough set of circumstances, didn't look great against LSU, didn't look great against Mississippi State, but still, an 11-1 Alabama team can't be kept at home, right?
I really don't think so. That's sort of one of the permutations that plays into me liking them so much at plus money is that there are so many ways the season can play out now that are totally okay for them and put them into the playoff. And oh, by the way, once they get into the playoff, they're basically a favorite against anyone, which sets up awesome hedge opportunities, live betting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, you know, we talked a lot. You had a sort of a riff about Ohio State earlier. This is a name brand team. The committee is going to go out of their way to place them whenever possible. They draw well. People watch them on TV. I think Alabama and Saban is a chip that they want to use here. Like if it's Alabama and Wisconsin, if it's Alabama and Miami ends up losing to Clemson and Alabama loses to Georgia, whatever it is, like if you're stacking teams up against each other, I understand that Alabama's non-conference wasn't very good. We thought Florida State would be awesome. It turns out everybody got hurt, et cetera. I think Alabama's conference games obviously haven't told you a lot. They're playing scrubs in the second half against everybody, but they have a win at Mississippi State. If LSU keeps playing better, Mississippi State closes out well. I mean, I don't think you're going to be able to look at Alabama at the end of the year against most of the teams you're thinking about matching them up with 4, 5, 6 for who gets in. I think you're going to side with Alabama every time. And if the tiebreaker is that they're Alabama, then so be it, but kind of know that going in.
Well, I'll be really curious to see what happens here in this matchup between Clemson and Miami that we're going to get, because that's a game that, you know, I mean, it's going to be win or go home, I think, from a college football playoff standpoint. I don't think there's any way that Miami gets in with a loss, even though they have a fairly decent resume, especially with that that victory that they have over Notre Dame. But, you know, that's kind of a playoff elimination game that should be a whole lot of fun. And then that's where, you know, we kind of create some of these different scenarios. And, of course, we'll have to see, you know, how things play out going forward in the college football marketplace. But anything else on the college football side from you, Lockie, or you want to flip over to college basketball here for a few minutes?
I think, you know, just to reemphasize something to sort of tie a bow on this topic that you brought up a little earlier, and I know you, I actually want to emphasize this. You bring this up. When I started listening to your podcast, you brought this up every time. Now, obviously, it was sort of part of an advertisement, but the idea of just having a ton of outs and you know, like you have people on who are single game bettors, who do power ratings, who just like dive in to all of these angles. That's sort of a different approach. A lot of my profit during the season comes from futures and preseason and hedging and all that kind of stuff. Having multiple outs is almost more important for this market than it is for other markets. The difference in a game, obviously, between a half point and a point that you're betting is significant to your long-term sort of ROI. But I mean, futures, getting a price that's, if there's a 10 to 1 and I can get a 25 to 1, if there's a 20 to 1 and I can get a 100 to 1, I mean, those are things that add up even more. So I would just emphasize, and open parlays. Can I find a shop that has them? Can I find a shop that has them and has lucrative futures? I think those are all things to kind of keep in mind if this is an area of gambling that you're interested in.
No, I completely agree. And that is very important to have multiple outs, because it's not just a matter of, you know, the obvious fact that 10 to 1 is better than, or that 10 to 1 is better than 8 to 1 or 25 to 1 is better than 20 to 1. That's obvious. Everybody knows that. But you also gain some profitability in terms of your hedging margin by having that extra $5 on a 25 to 1 instead of a 20 to 1. That's very significant. That makes a huge difference when you start talking about hedging some of these futures as we get deeper into the season. So that's a whole other part of this. And I think that's maybe something that people don't understand, is that you don't necessarily need your future to win. It'd be great if it does. If you hit the jackpot and get that, that's awesome. But you need your future to get into a position to where you can guarantee profit. That's the most important thing. So that's why it matters.
And
so
I would
you can get a 40 as opposed to a 25 or something like that.
Right. I totally agree. And I think, you know, one of the things you have to understand about the futures market in relation to other markets is, you know, like if you have the odds screen up for the Knicks game, whenever they play, I think they play tonight. If you have the odds up for the Knicks screen, the price moves a half point somewhere. Like that has like a huge ripple effect. Like the market stays pretty efficient in that way. It's not like you can get crazy middles for long periods of time. It's not like you can play arbitrages with money lines against each other very easily. Or if you do, you have to look really hard and maybe go to some places that are less reputable. In the futures market, there are arbitrages available right now. Like I could just click and find them. You just have to know how to look. And so, but just what that shows you is not so much that you should be playing those because you're tying up your money for a while, but you know, like if I played Warriors minus 170 to win the title somewhere and I created an arbitrage against some kind of plus money somewhere else, then I'm waiting 9 months to get like $20. Like that's not really that worth it. But just what that shows you is that the market maybe isn't the most efficient thing in the world. So there are going to be crazy price fluctuations. You're going to see value be totally different in other areas. You're going to see like the five dimes opposite don't bets like come in a little bit, you know, inefficiently compared to some prices you see elsewhere. So yeah, I mean, in the futures market, shopping around is that much more important.
All right, we'll move over to the college basketball side of things here for a few minutes now. And, you know, I love this time of year for college basketball, not because it's just starting, but which is obviously a great thing, and there are obviously soft, inefficient lines out there in the market. But you get a lot of these games here, these litmus test types of games, these massive non-conference matchups in some of these early season tournaments, or just because teams want to try to strengthen their resumes for the future. So I know one of the talking points that you wanted to talk about here today, Lockie, is about betting in different parts of the college basketball season and how bettors can get advantages from doing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the really interesting thing just that I found when I first started really kind of digging into college basketball, this is like, I would say year 4 or 5 that I've been doing it very seriously. Obviously I know that's not the same track record as a lot of other people you have on, but my number one thing when I get into something new is just, I try to be as intellectually curious as possible about what makes this sport different. You know, what are the segments that you can break the season into? How do you gain an advantage in those segments? So, I mean, any college basketball fan kind of worth their salt kind of knows that you basically have non-conference play, you have conference play, and you have postseason play. And those three segments are just completely different. The trends that you see are completely different. You know, whether you want to bet favorites or underdogs and knowing how totals change and all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's so different. Non-conference has neutral courts, all those kind of things. It makes handicapping college basketball a lot different than, you know, college football, where you have non-conference and conference, but the emphasis on each game is so much different, so much more important, et cetera. So just some things early in the year that I think just would surprise people. So when I first got into betting college basketball and I ran a lot of numbers, just one of the absolutely wild things that I thought, because I come into college basketball with a contrarian mindset, that's how I come into everything. I would come into college basketball and I would think, all right, the season is starting. There's a ton of hype about blue blood programs, big name programs. I would bet that fading them blindly would be a good result. I would bet if I bet against, let's take a subset of Duke, UCLA, North Carolina, Kansas, and Gonzaga. Let's just take that subset. So we're throwing out Kentucky for the purposes of this exercise, but teams where you just have to feel like there's an extra point or two of value on the other side in every game. If I just take underdogs, I have to be good. If you blind bet Duke, UCLA, North Carolina, Kansas, Gonzaga as favorites in the month of November, so non-conference play when the season is just starting, if you just bet on these great teams, you just show up and you think, oh, Duke, kind of like them, I'm going to bet $100 on them. If you blind bet this set of teams, you hit 60.2%, and you've had one losing season in the past 12 years. That was like, that absolutely blew my mind. So I think part one of college basketball is understanding that the approach that you take in other sports does not necessarily apply to the non-conference portion of this season. And that in a lot of cases, you're talking about these blue blood programs against smaller schools. Basically, everyone's starting fresh, no matter how many starters you're bringing back. Everybody needs time to gel. And when you have two teams on the court that haven't had a lot of practice time together, that haven't had a lot of game time together, the more athletic team, the team with the superior athletes, is probably going to dominate that game because the smaller conference school hasn't had a chance to really gel yet. So that was really one thing that, you know, I sort of found interesting as a contrarian. Kentucky, that doesn't really apply to you. They're about 50% any way you cut up the numbers. So, but just, you know, blind betting favorites, huge teams, it actually can be a profitable angle in some situations, and I'm not sure people realize that.
No, that was something that I didn't realize. I'm glad you brought that set up, and I like the subset of teams that you used as well. You know, you get these national brand teams, and that is something that's very important. A lot of times people kind of look at that and say, you know, well, they lost this freshman and that freshman, and they had a couple of seniors, and they're both gone. So maybe they'll get off to a little bit of a slow start. They have all these highly touted, you know, high school All-Americans and all this, but still, you know, they haven't played together and, you know, this and that. And a lot of times, like you said, it just doesn't matter because these teams are so athletic. They're faster, they're stronger, they're quicker, they shoot better. Not to mention a lot of times, too, that subset of teams that you mentioned, they're going to play their games at home early on in the season. So they're going to be in friendly conditions. They're going to be playing against teams that may be a little bit overwhelmed by the moment, or they're going to be playing at neutral sites where, you know, these kids are used to playing at neutral sites. It's not going to phase them at all. So I think there are a lot of good reasons behind that stat that you gave out, but it is still surprising to hear it because, like you said, we know those numbers are pumped up a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, it was the most, when I ran all the trends, all the numbers for trying to sort of portion out parts of the year and how I wanted to approach them, I would say this was the number one thing that was surprising to me, was that so early in the year, you could get so much value on these teams, or maybe not value, but you're at least getting a fair number. And I think one other thing to take into account, and, you know, like I do not have sort of the data to back this up as much as with the other stuff, but you're talking about a sport where, you know, I sort of refer to the start of college basketball as a cult, as, you know, it's sort of a soft open, like you would have at a casino where, you know, it's open, but the really kind of the busy time doesn't come until later. That's kind of how college basketball works in terms of public perception, right? So, you know, football is still going on. College football is still going on. The NBA is only getting bigger as years go by. So you're talking about how much money is there really being bet into these games, and sort of how much are lines being shaded as a result of that. When you start getting into February and then obviously March Madness, contrarianism rules supreme, you know, you're going to want to probably fade a lot of these teams in a lot of different situations. I think that sort of the time of the year and the money that's being bet and who's betting sort of also help to shape that trend.
All right, we got a pretty big tournament coming up here, and it's actually on Tuesday night. It's the Champions Classic. It's not really a tournament, just a two-game rotation here. At the United Center in Chicago, Kentucky takes on Kansas, Duke takes on Michigan State. We got some numbers for these games, but Lockie, before we discuss these matchups specifically here and kind of break down these four teams and these numbers, what would your recommendation be for people early on in the season that see these heavyweight matchups here and probably wind up reading too much into them?
Yeah, I mean, college basketball, one of the differences, significant differences between this sport and every other sport is, to be honest, the irrelevance of the regular season. People that bet NBA that I talk to all the time, this is one of their sort of tried and true complaints, is trying to get a handle on motivation, or, I mean, God forbid you try to model any kind of motivation into teams. It's impossible. And I think early in the season with colleges, what you have to understand is this team is not the team that you're going to see in February, not the team you're going to see in March. This especially is true from a future standpoint. Like you're going to bet a lot more based on ceiling and projected seed than you are that Kentucky struggled with Vermont yesterday, for example. That does that game really tell me anything about where Kentucky's at long-term? No, it tells me absolutely nothing. Does it tell me that short-term they're having trouble figuring out rotations, who should be the right starting five, who should play together at crunch time? And does it tell me that Vermont came in with a lot of returning starters? Sure, it tells me all those things. So when you get these marquee matchups, I think there's a tendency to just – you sort of read too much into the one or two games you're seeing already. There's such excitement about these games. There's such excitement about freshman players specifically. Sometimes, and I mean, we can get into the first game because that kind of leads me to where I'm going here. Duke, Michigan State, I think we checked the openers are out. Again, we're recording this on Monday afternoon. I believe Duke is a 1.5-point favorite. I like Michigan State at anything plus here. I think that line is actually incorrect. I get where it comes from. I get what shapes it. I was actually surprised to see that Coach K actually has kind of dominated Tom Izzo historically. I think he's won 5 or 6 in a row against him. I think at least one was in this tournament. But the other thing about those games, I mean, you might see that and think, oh, that's got to be a significant coaching edge. That's got to be something schematically. I think you could make a compelling case in all of those games that Duke had a better team and in some cases a much better team. I believe when the Okafor Winslow Tyus Jones team, I believe they played Michigan State and it was, I mean, it's night and day. I mean, that team ended up winning the title. So I don't think you've really gotten equal Duke, equal Michigan State. I think that to a certain extent, that's what you have here. Talent. I think although Duke's freshmen are talented, everybody is pretty much raving about everything that Marvin Bagley does. And rightfully so, he's a monster. I think kind of the first two games without, you know, sort of digging deeper, you might think that they've gelled, they're playing awesome. I think it's really telling the minutes that Coach K is playing all these guys in the first two games. If you go back to, I don't have it in front of me, if you go back to the second game that they played this season, first game they played this season, the starters are playing 30, 35 minutes a game, again, of a possible 40 minutes. And these are blowout games. The opener was against Elon. Basically, no bench players are getting more than 5 to 7 minutes a game. I think he only went 9 deep both games, maybe 10 deep right at the end. And I think what that tells me is that he's trying to get these guys to play with chemistry and to gel as fast as possible, but they're not there yet. If he felt great about it, then why would they be playing 35 minutes a game against Elon? So I think what you have is a situation where Duke long-term, they're going to be awesome. You have Bagley, you have Grayson Allen, you have Duvall. They're going to be awesome. Their ceiling is essentially limitless. They might have the best player in the country. But for this game specifically, I think when you have played basically no second team and you have no depth and you're expecting these guys to play 35 minutes a game against a Michigan State team that is 10 deep with quality players that have reps together, they're trying to work in Jaren Jackson as a freshman at the two. I get that. But, I mean, Winston and Bridges before he got hurt and Ward and all of the guys that come off their bench, these are guys that have been in the program for a while. I think their depth could really wear Duke out in this game. I like Michigan State a lot, just almost solely based on that fact alone.
No, I think it's a good betting angle to look at early on in the season because it's very interesting to see Duke doing this when, you know, Coach K knows about the talent that he has. He knows about what this team's ceiling is. And he also knows, like you said, that by and large, the regular season doesn't mean a whole lot. I mean, maybe it helps from a seeding standpoint, but Coach K knows he's going to the tournament, knows who he's going to the tournament with. And yeah, 12 of the 73 field goal attempts in that Utah Valley game for Duke came from bench guys. So 61 of the 73 coming from starters. All the starters played 30-plus, as you alluded to. So I think that's a really good angle to look at. Now, the question here is, you know, do you handicap the coaches in a matchup like this? Do you feel like Coach K or Tom Izzo, you know, is going to put more emphasis, on this game one way or another?
So I think first of all, it can be a little dangerous in like these super elite matchups to kind of almost have the coaches be a factor at all. In the second game, if we end up talking about that, I'm not sure Cal or Bill Self, honestly, I'm not sort of insulting them in any way, but I'm not sure that they're good enough to factor one way or the other outside of just having recruited these super teams. With Tom Izzo and Coach K, I think obviously there's a lot more respect for sort of both of their pedigrees. I don't think there's a way to sort of handicap a college team's motivation coming into situations like this. Now, when we start getting into conference play, and I mean, I do think revenge is sort of a factor that's overplayed, but I do think there are certain situations where that at least has to be considered. I think in a neutral court elite game, I think you have to sort of assume motivation is at a max for both of these teams.
All right, let's go to that second game here then between Kansas and Kentucky. And we're seeing right now, and again, as you said, we're recording this on Monday. That's around the 4:30 Eastern time hour that we're taking a look at this. Kansas, a 2-point favorite at Five Dimes, a 3-point favorite at Bet Online. You're paying minus 15 to lay the three there with them. So it looks like as of now, the early action appears to be on Kansas a little bit, with this number going up a tad at Bet Online. Of course, this could very well change by Tuesday morning when everyone's listening to this segment. But you got a preference in this game?
So first of all, just what you just said, the line movement there is, I guess, predictably interesting would be the right way to describe it. So we've all watched Kentucky play these two games. I believe they were on national TV even in game one. They might have been on SEC Network or something. But I think a lot of people watched that Vermont game yesterday, and I think a lot of people sort of said, whoa, this team might not be there yet. And that's dangerous. I think that's really dangerous in a situation like this. This is not a series that has gone great for Kansas. I mean, they played a couple of classics. I believe last year was a game that went to overtime. It was something like 96-90 or something. It was a really crazy game. But Cal historically has played really well against Kansas, no matter what freshman he's had. So, I mean, there's definitely not – I don't know if I put a lot of stock in Kentucky for that reason, but it definitely doesn't make me put any stock in Kansas. I think when you just look at this year's version of these two teams, the first game that we talked about is, I think, the best game. And then this game might be the most interesting game, because I think we know that Duke and Michigan State to a certain extent are going to be there at the end. I'm not sure both of these teams are going to be there at the end. And part of the reason for that is just who's been playing and how much they've been playing and cohesion and honestly talent. I think everyone just assumes that Kentucky, oh, they got a new crop of freshmen, they're going to be fine. And I think that's really dangerous, because in your head, you're picturing DeMarcus Cousins and Karl Anthony Towns and Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox. And I'm not sure they have that this year. And I think it's dangerous to just assume, especially with a freshman class where Bagley, Porter, who went to Missouri, Ayton, who went to Arizona, like, they don't have those guys. They have the next best guys, and they have like seven of them. But, you know, is Kevin Knox going to be what Bagley is to Duke? I think it's dangerous to just assume the answer is yes. So I think, you know, this game is interesting because I'm not sure Cal knows what to expect from his team in this game. I'm not sure he knows what to expect from them the next month of the season. I think he's literally trying to figure out who should even be playing in this game. And then Kansas has actually some kind of similar problems. I think everyone was really surprised. Malik Newman, who I thought was maybe going to be their best player this year or their second best player, has been coming off the bench and I think played about 15 minutes in their opener. I'm not sure what to make of Kansas either. I'm not sure how much they can score. They lost so much last year, obviously, you know, when you're remembering Kansas from last year, Mason and Jackson were their two best players. Devontae Graham, their third best player, is back. There's so many question marks in this game. But one thing that I just, from watching both teams play early on, there's definitely not a lot of flow. There's definitely not a lot of cohesion. Even though Kentucky plays with a lot of pace in these situations, and that can be really dangerous based on what I'm about to say next, I do think the under might be pretty valuable, depending on, obviously, we don't have totals opening. Handicapping college opening totals in these matchups is actually pretty tricky for me. But I would say if you could get something 150 or higher, even high 140s, I would be tempted to take a look at it. Kentucky's pace, I think, is going to keep this number pretty high, but I think you're talking about two teams that are going to make a ton of mistakes that are, you know, lazy passes, guys not being in the right spot, Cal yelling a lot and throwing people on the bench. I think these are all things that are going to kind of create a clunky, less watchable version of the first game.
So you talked about the first game and you said you think both of those teams will be there at the end. Duke right now, the favorite, plus 500 at Bet Online to win the national championship. Michigan State plus 550, Kentucky plus 1,000, Kansas plus 1,400. Do these two matchups on Tuesday night mean anything to you from a future standpoint?
I mean, the short answer is no. The long answer is every game sort of, to a certain extent, helps form an identity for a team. Last year, a team that I watched a lot early on, anybody that follows me on Twitter probably knows about this, but Oregon was a team that, I mean, I felt like I hit totally right. I was really in on them early on. The market was less in on them. Possibly because nobody really got to watch them play a lot early on. And, you know, obviously they got some tough luck with an injury going into the tournament to Boucher. But I think this is a sport more than any other where you can use your eyes and you can use metrics and you can watch the first month or two of the season and still get a lot of value on these teams. I mean, Duke, Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky, North Carolina, all these schools, the Arizona, which I don't think we mentioned, these are teams that, okay, they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 to 1 now. And when we get to March, history kind of tells us that unless one team has literally proven itself to be sort of an undefeated elite composition of players, which I don't think we have this year, then those prices are going to be exactly the same when you get to March. And there's basically no reason to bet any of them right now at, you know, anything 12 to 15 to one or less, because, you know, Duke's +500, they get a one seed, they get a two seed. Guess what? They're +600 going into the tournament. So if the idea of betting a team now is that you're grabbing a price that won't be available later, these two games won't give you the teams to do that with. That's just not how blue blood programs in the futures market and giving these teams credit for accomplishments they haven't gotten yet. That's just not how that works. Teams that are playing outside of that, that's to me where you gain an advantage. So you try to find a team that's, let's say 30 to 1, 50 to 1, 100 to 1 or higher that you think actually has a much better chance of being a 1 or a 2 seed than their odds are giving them credit for. That's a team that you can grab a price on now with the idea that that price will not be available anymore. So, you know, to sort of segue to our next topic, a couple teams that I talked about on my site and on Twitter and ever earlier this year that I think have a ton of potential to do that. I think Wichita State is absolutely one of those teams. They're in a different situation than the other teams I'll talk about because historically the committee has not viewed them very favorably despite sort of immense talent and accomplishments just because of the conference they play in. They move to a different conference. They play in the American, which has a couple other teams that sort of have designs on postseason success this year. I guess Cincinnati would be the most notable one there, but I think Wichita is still clearly the class of that conference. Every starter back, every notable bench player back, you know, Shamet and Francamp are your guards. I think obviously when we get into postseason play, we'll talk more about the importance of high quality guard play. I don't think it gets a lot better than that. Coaching, all that kind of stuff. I think that's a price you can grab sort of with comfort that at the very worst, it stays the same. Maybe Shamet gets re-injured, but again, injury luck is the same for every team. I think that's a price that's sort of destined to go down as we get closer to the tournament. Just real quick, a couple other prices that I would say to keep an eye on. I think St. Mary's is a team that could have maybe, I say, a Gonzaga-like season. I don't know if they're going to make the title game like Gonzaga did, but a Gonzaga-like regular season is absolutely in play for St. Mary's this year. The conference they play in has a couple okay teams, but really this is a team that went 28-29-4 last year. That season is absolutely possible. They're hovering in sort of that 40, 50, 60 to one range. And USC, I think, is actually fascinating. I don't know if they're talented enough to really be truly elite like Arizona and Duke are and all these other teams that we sort of already talked about. But if Andy Enfield is really good and they have all five starters back and their starters do have talent, this is a team people kind of remember from those wacky tournament games in March. Chuck O'Bannon, Ed O'Bannon's nephew, actually, is their seventh man this year. Probably will end up being more pivotal than that, hopefully, as the year goes on. Derek Thornton, the guy they have as transfer from Duke. This is a team that's like hanging out in the 20, 30, 40, 50 to one range. Like, this could be a one seed. They're already ranked in the top 15. Like, this team looks like a one or a two seed, which means that that might be a price worth grabbing also.
No, I completely agree, and I'm glad you went to that point. I'm glad you went in this direction because that's what I was going to talk about. What I did mention in my futures odds update piece, and I know you mentioned it in yours as well, that's what you want to do here. You want to look for these teams to where you can grab some line value now because you feel like they're going to just drop in price as the season goes along. And sometimes you're going to be wrong, but more often than not, you're probably going to be right if you're taking shots on 50, 60, 80, 100 to 1 types of teams to where, you know, if they pick up a win in their one big non-conference game, their price is going to drop by 10 bucks, maybe 15 bucks, right, depending on how big of a win it actually is. So that's what you want to be looking for at this time of the year.
Yeah, and I mean, think about, I mean, this is almost sounds like an obvious thing. I guess it might not even bear mentioning, but think about how often you have to be right when you're betting +300s, +400s, +500s, and how much the market has to move in your direction in order to guarantee a profit. You know, having the ability to take shots on teams 30, 40, 50 to one, I mean, it doesn't take a lot to sort of wiggle the futures market in a direction where if you want it, if you're somebody who's just grabbing prices with the idea that you're immediately hedging opposite that the second the number moves sort of in your favor, I can't say it's easy to predict which way these numbers will go, but it is easier to predict which way they will go and trying to get numbers in your favor at that sort of tier than it is at the bottom with 2, 3, 4, 5 to 1s and trying to get the market to move in a way where, you know, they're sort of like the Alabama of college football. So, I mean, I think, you know, price shopping on these teams, we both talked about it. It just to sort of tie a bow on this, like compared to something we talked about at the start of the podcast, you have to ask yourself, why are you betting this? Like, what is your purpose for betting this? Aside from just, you know, lighting money on fire, maybe that's your purpose, in which case that's, you can pretty much do that with anything. But if your purpose is really to grab a number, then those are the kind of teams that you're going to be looking at. If your purpose is that you're going to pick a team just because you think they're going to win it all, so in which case that's, I guess, the stock equivalent of a hold, then there's no reason to do that right now. So I think when you open up the futures page, which, I mean, everybody sort of does in their free time, like, oh, like, I wonder what the title odds are. I think when you do that, it's really important that before you sort of click that wager button, why are you doing this now? And hopefully we've sort of gone over a few of the reasons why that, what some of the motivation might be there.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And we'll throw a shout out to Sports Cheater, who usually joins us on Tuesday here. You know, last year, I mean, he had, I want to say something like 20 or 25, maybe even 30 of the teams that were in the field with futures tickets, just because he was grabbing up prices as the season went along. And obviously not everybody has the bankroll capacity to do that, but if you can isolate 8 to 10 teams, get them in top four seeds in each section of the bracket, then you really start setting yourself up for a lot of success. If you can find those teams as the season goes along, hit some of those good prices. So again, that's really the theme that we wanted to push across here is that, yeah, it's great if you hit your 40 to one, it's great if you hit your 50 or 60 to one, but if you set yourself up for profit, you know, with this hold of what, 4 months now, 4.5 months that it is, that's ultimately the end game that you want to try to achieve here. But good to get Lockie Lockerson on the show for the first time here. I know you've got your own personal website. What's the story over there?
So, yeah, I mean, for those, there might be people listening to this that say, I have no idea who that guy is. He has no idea what he's talking about. Never have him back again. Hopefully nobody's saying that. If you are and you just wonder what my background is, unlike some of the other people you have on the show, I'm not a professional. I am the most amateur person there is with this. I have a job. I work 60 hours a week. I have a wife and kid and a mortgage. But this kind of stuff is fascinating to me. And I think the futures market specifically is fascinating. If you go over to LockieLockerson.com, you follow me on Twitter at Lockie Lockerson. And obviously I contribute some futures articles for Bang the Book. I think discussions about futures markets and ways to take advantage of the things that are available are really fascinating and sort of merit more discussion than they get a lot of the time. So feel free to sort of check out those things if you're interested in that.
I'll tell you what, you call yourself an amateur, but you've got some very, very, very razor sharp points of view on the futures market. So definitely an asset to have you over at bangthebook.com. And I encourage everyone to check you out on Twitter at Lockie Lockerson. But Lockie, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get you on the show again soon.
Great. Thanks, Adam.
Great to get Lockie Lockerson on the show for the first time to talk some college football and some college basketball futures with us. Who knows, maybe that'll become a little bit more of a regular thing as his schedule permits, but good to get him on the program here. I know he's got a very loyal following out there on Twitter, so shout out to all you guys that were blowing up my mentions when he talked about his first appearance on the show here, and hopefully it won't be the last. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, two guests will join us. The first, Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. The second, Wes Reynolds for our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. Thursday, two professional handicappers, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com and Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 11, myself and a to-be-determined guest, Sports Cheetah, not able to join us this week, but then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.